Choices. It was always choices. There'd been that man down in Spackle, the one that had killed those little kids. The people had sent for her, and she'd looked at him and seen the guilt writhing in his head like a red worm, and then she'd taken them to his farm and showed them where to dig, and he'd thrown himself down and asked her for mercy, because he said he'd been drunk, and it had all been done in alcohol. Her words came back to her. She'd said in sobriety, "End it in hemp," and they dragged him off and hanged him in a hempen rope. And she'd gone to watch because she owed him that much, and he'd cursed, which was unfair because hanging is a clean death, or at least cleaner than the one he'd have got if the villagers had dared defy her, and she'd seen the shadow of death come for him. And then behind death came the smaller, brighter figures, and then, in the darkness, the rocking chair creaked as it thundered back and forth. The villagers had said justice had been done, and she'd lost patience and told them to go home then, and to pray to whatever gods they believed in that it was never done to them. The smug mask of virtue triumphant could almost be as horrible as the face of wickedness revealed. She shuddered at the memory, almost as horrible, but not quite. The odd thing was, quite a lot of the villagers had turned up to his funeral, and there had been mutterings from one or two people on the lines of, "Yes, well, but overall he wasn't such a bad chap, and anyway, maybe she made him say it." And she'd got the dark looks. Supposing there was justice for all, after all. For every unheeded beggar, every harsh word, every neglected duty, every slight, every choice. Because that was the point, wasn't it? You had to choose. You might be right, you might be wrong, but you had to choose, knowing that the rightness or wrongness might never be clear, or even that you were deciding between two sorts of wrong, that there was no right anywhere. And always, always, you did it by yourself. You were the one there, on the edge, watching and listening. Never any tears, never any apology, never any regrets. You saved all that up in a way that could be used when needed. She never discussed this with Nanny Og or any of the other witches. That would be breaking the secret. Sometimes late at night, when the conversation tiptoed around to that area, Nanny might just drop in some line like, "All scrivens went peacefully enough at the finish," and may or may not mean something by it. Nanny, as far as she could see, didn't agonize very much. To her, some things obviously had to be done, and that was that. Any of the thoughts that hung around, she kept locked up tight, even from herself. Granny envied her. Who'd come to her funeral when she died? They didn't ask her. Memories jostled. Other figures marched out into the shadows around the candlelight. She'd done things and been places, and found ways to turn anger outwards that had surprised even her. She'd faced down others far more powerful than she was, if only she'd allowed them to believe it. She'd given up so much, but she'd learnt a lot. It was a sign. She knew it had come sooner or later. They'd realised it, and now she was no more use. What had she ever earned? The reward for toil had been more toil. If you dug the best ditches, they gave you a bigger shovel. And you got those bare walls, this bare floor, this cold cottage. The darkness in the corners grew out into the room and began to tangle in her hair. They didn't ask her. She'd never, ever asked for anything in return. And the trouble with not asking for anything in return was that sometimes you didn't get it. She'd always tried to face towards the light. She'd always tried to face towards the light. But the harder you stared into the brightness, the harsher it burned into you, until at last the temptation picked you up and bid you turn around to see how long, rich, strong and dark, steaming away behind you, your shadow had become. Someone mentioned her name. There was a moment of light and noise and bewilderment, and then she awoke and looked at the darkness flowing in and saw things in black and white.
"So sorry. Delays on the road, you know how it is."
The newcomers hurried in and joined the crowd, who paid little attention because they were watching the unplanned entertainment around the thrones.
"Note spelling?"
"Definitely a bit tricky," said Nanny. "Esmeralda, now that was a good one. Githa would have been good too, but Esmeralda, yes, you can't argue with it. But you know, kids, they'll all be calling her Spelly."
"If she's lucky," said Agnes gloomily.
"I didn't expect anyone to say it," Magrat hissed. "I just wanted to make sure she didn't end up with Magrat." Mightily Oates was standing with his eyes cast upwards and his hands clasped together. Occasionally he made a whimpering sound.
We can change it, can't we? Said King Verence. Where's the royal historian?
Sean coughed.
It's not Wednesday evening, and I'll have to go and fetch the proper hat, sire.
Can we change it or not, man?
It has been said, sire, at the official time. I think it's her name now, but I'll need to go and look it up. Everyone heard it, sire.
No, you can't change it, said Nanny,
who, as the royal historian's mum, took it as read that she knew more than the royal historian. Look at old Moo Cow Porchick over in Slice, for one.
What happened to him, then? Said the king sharply.
His full name is James What-the-hell's-that-cow-doing-in-here, poor chick, said Magrat.
That was a very strange day, I do remember that, said Nanny.
And if my mother had been sensible enough to tell Brother Purdory my name instead of coming over all bashful and writing it down, life would have been a whole lot different, said Magrat.
She glanced nervously at Verence.
Probably worse, of course. So I've got to take Esmeralda out to her people and tell them one of her middle names is Note Spelling, said Verence.
Well, we did once have a king called My God He's Heavy the First, said Nanny, and the beer's been on for the last couple of hours, so basically you'll get a cheer whatever you say.
Besides, thought Agnes, I know for a fact there's people out there called Syphilidae Wilson and Yodel Lightly and Total Biscuit. This was because Lancre people had a fresh, if somewhat sideways, approach to names, generally just picking a sound they liked. Sometimes there was a logic to it, but only by accident. There'd be a chlamydia weaver toddling around today if her mother hadn't suddenly decided that Sally was easier to spell. Verence smiled.
Well, let me have her,
said Mightily Oates.
And perhaps someone ought to give this man a drink.
I'm so terribly, terribly sorry, whispered the priest, as the king walked between the lines of guests.
Been on the drink already, I expect, said Nanny. I never, ever touch alcohol, moaned the priest.
He dabbed at his streaming eyes with a handkerchief.
I knew there was something wrong with you as soon as I looked at you, said Nanny. Where's Esme, then?
I don't know, Nanny, said Agnes.
She'd know about this, you mark my words. This will be a feather in her cap, right enough, a princess named after her. She'll be crowing about it for months. I'm going to see what's going on.
She stumped off. Agnes grabbed the priest's arm. Come along, you, she sighed.
I really cannot, express how sorry I...
It's a very strange evening all round.
I've never, heard of the custom before.
People put a lot of importance on words in these parts.
I'm very much afraid the king will give a bad, report of me to Brother Melchior.
Really?
There are some people who could turn even the most amiable character into a bully, and the priest seemed to be one of them. There was something sort of damp about him, the kind of helpless hopelessness that made people angry rather than charitable, the total certainty that if the whole world was a party, he'd still find the kitchen. She seemed to be stuck with him. The VIPs were all crowded around the open doors, where loud cheering indicated that the people of Lancre thought that Note Spelling was a nice name for a future queen. "Perhaps you should just sit here and try to get a grip," she said. "There's going to be dancing later on."
"Oh, I don't dance," said Mightily Oates. "Dancing is a snare to entrap the weak-willed."
"Oh, well, I suppose there's the barbecue outside." Mightily Oates dabbed at his eyes again.
Any fish?
I doubt it. We only eat fish this month.
Oh.
But a deadpan voice didn't seem to work. He still wanted to talk to her.
Because the prophet Bruther eschewed meat, when he was wandering in the desert, you see.
Each mouthful 40 times.
Pardon?
Sorry, I was just thinking of something else. Against her better judgment, Agnes let curiosity enter her life.
What meat is there to eat in a desert?
None, I think.
So he didn't exactly refuse to eat it, did he? Agnes scanned the gathering crowds, but no one seemed anxious to join in this little discussion.
You'd have to, ask Brother Melchior that. I'm so sorry, I think I have a migraine coming on.
You don't believe anything you're saying, do you? Agnes thought. Nervousness and a sort of low-grade terror was radiating off him. Perdita added, What a damp little maggot.
I've got to go and, I've got to go and help, said Agnes, backing away. He nodded. As she left, he blew his nose again, produced a small black book from a pocket, sighed, and hurriedly opened it at a bookmark. She picked up a tray to add some weight to the alibi, stepped towards the food table, turned to look back at the hunched figure as out of place as a lost sheep, and walked into someone as solid as a tree.
"Who is that strange person?" said a voice by her ear. Agnes heard Perdita curse her for jumping sideways, but she recovered and managed to smile awkwardly at the person who'd spoken. He was a young man, and it dawned on her, a very attractive one. Attractive men were not in plentiful supply in Lancre, where licking your hand and smoothing your hair down before taking a girl out was considered swanky.
"He's got a ponytail," squeaked Perdita. "Now that is cool."
Agnes felt the blush start somewhere in the region of her knees and begin its inevitable acceleration upwards.
Sorry, she said.
"You can practically smell him," said the man.
He inclined his head slightly towards the sad priest.
"Looks rather like a scruffy little crow, don't you think?"
Yes,
Agnes managed. The blush rounded the curve of her bosom, red-hot and rising. A ponytail on a man was unheard of in Lancre, and the cut of his clothes also suggested that he'd spent time somewhere where fashion changed more than once a lifetime. No one in Lancre had ever worn a waistcoat embroidered with peacocks.
"Say something to him,"
Perdita screamed within.
"Mm-hmm,"
said Agnes. Behind her, Mightily Oates had got up and was inspecting the food suspiciously.
"I beg your pardon,"
Agnes swallowed, partly because Perdita was trying to shake her by the throat.
"He does look as if he's about to flap away, doesn't he?" she said. "Oh, please don't let me giggle."
The man snapped his fingers. A waiter hurrying past with a tray of drinks turned through 90 degrees.
"Can I get you a drink, Miss Nid?"
White wine?" Agnes whispered.
"No, you don't want white wine. The red is much more colourful," he said, taking a glass and handing it to her. "What is our quarry doing now?" "Ah, applying himself to a biscuit with a very small amount of pâté on it, I see."
"Ask him his name," Perdita yelled.
No, that would be forward of me, Agnes thought. Perdita screamed,
"You were built forward, you stupid lump."
"Please let me introduce myself. I'm Vlad," he said kindly.
Yes, he's about to pounce on... Yes, a prawn vol-au-vent. Prawns up here, eh? King Verence has spared no expense, has he?"
"He had them brought up on ice all the way from Genua," Agnes mumbled.
"They do very good seafood there, I believe."
"Never been," Agnes mumbled. Inside her head, Perdita lay down and cried.
"Maybe we could visit it one day, Agnes," said Vlad.
The blush was at Agnes's neck.
"It's very hot in here, don't you think?" said Vlad.
"It's the fire," said Agnes gratefully. "It's over there," she added,
nodding to where quite a large amount of tree was burning in the hall's enormous fireplace and could only have been missed by a man with a bucket on his head.
"My sister and I have..." Vlad began.
"Excuse me, Miss Nit."
"What is it, Sean?"
"Drop dead, Seanog," said Perdita. "Mum says you're to come at once, miss. She's down in the yard. She says it's important."
"It always is," said Agnes.
She gave Vlad a quick smile.
"Excuse me, I have to go and help an old lady."
"I'm sure we'll meet again, Agnes," said Vlad.
Thank you.
She hurried out and was halfway down the steps before she remembered she hadn't told him her name. Two steps further, she thought, well, he could have asked someone. Two steps after that, Perdita said,
"Why would he ask anyone your name?"
Agnes cursed the fact that she had grown up with an invisible enemy.
"Come and look at this,"
hissed Nanny, grabbing her by the arm as she reached the courtyard. She was dragged out into the carriages parked near the stables. Nanny waved a finger to the door of the nearest one.
"See that?" she said.
"It looks very impressive," said Agnes.
"See the crest?"
"Looks like a couple of black and white birds. Magpies, aren't they?"
"Yeah, but look at the writing,"
said Nanny Ogg, with that dark relish old ladies reserve for nastily portentous things.
"Carpe jugulum," read Agnes aloud.
"That's, well,
Carpe diem is seize the day. So this means...
Go for the throat, said Nanny. You know what our king has done, so we can play our part in this new change in world order thing and get money for hedges, because Clatch gets a nosebleed when Ankh-Morpork Pork stubs its toe. He's gone and invited some bigwigs from Uberwald. That's what he's done. Oh, dearie, dearie me. Vampires and werewolves. Werewolves and vampires. We'll all be murdered in one another's beds.
She walked up to the front of the coach and tapped on the wood near the driver, who was sitting hunched up in an enormous cloak.
Where are you from, Igor?
The shadowy figure turned.
What makes you think my name is Igor?
Lucky guess, said Nanny.
You think everyone from Uberwald is called Igor, do you? I could have any one of a thousand different names, woman.
Look, I'm Nanny Og, and this, excuse me, is Agnes Nitt. And you are?
My name is, well, is Igor, as a matter of fact, said Igor.
He raised a hasty finger. But
it might not have been.
It's a chilly night. Can we get you something?
Said Nanny cheerfully.
Perhaps a towel? Said Agnes.
Nanny nudged her in the ribs to be silent.
A glass of wine, perhaps? She said.
I do not drink wine, said Igor haughtily.
I've got some brandy, said Nanny, hitching up her skirt.
Oh, right. I drink brandy like stink.
Nicoleg Elastic twanged in the gloom.
So, said Nanny, passing up the flask, what you doing this far from home,
Igor? Why's there a stupid troll down there on the bridge?
Said Igor, taking the flask in one large hand, which Agnes noticed was a mass of scars and stitches.
Oh, that's Big Jim Beef. The king lets him live under there, provided he looks official when we've got company coming.
Beef is an odd name for a troll.
He likes the sound of it, said Nanny. It's like a man calling himself Rocky, I suppose. So I used to know an Igor from Uberwald. Walked with a limp. One eye a bit higher than the other, and the same manner of speaking. Very good brain at juggling, too.
That sounds like my uncle Igor, said Igor. He worked for the mad doctor at Blinth.
Ha! And he was a proper mad doctor, too. Not like the mad doctors you get these days.
And the servants... Even worse, no pride these days.
He tapped the brandy flask for emphasis.
When Uncle Igor was sent out for genius's brain, that's what you damn well got. There was none of this fumble finger stuff, and then pinching a brain out of the really insane jar and hoping no one had noticed. They always do, anyway.
Nanny took a step back. The only sensible way to hold a conversation with Igor was when you had an umbrella.
I think I've heard of that chap, she said. Didn't he stitch folk together out of dead parts?
No, really?
Said Agnes, shocked. How?
That's right. Is there a problem?
No, I call it prudent, said Nanny, taking her foot off Agnes's toe. My mum was a dab hand at sewing a new sheet from bits of old ones, and people's worth more than linen, so he's your master now, is he?
No, my Uncle Igor still works for him. Been struck by lightning 300 times and still puts in a full night's work.
Have a drop more of that brandy. It's very cold out here, said Nanny. So,
who is your master, Igor? Call them masters,
said Igor with sudden venom and a light shower.
Huh. Now the old count, he was a gentleman of the old school. He knew how it all works. Proper evening dress at all times. That's the rule.
Evening dress, eh?
Said Nanny.
Yes. This lot only wear it in the evening. Can you imagine that? The rest of the time it's all swanning around in fancy waistcoats and lacy skirts.
Huh.
Do you know what this lot have done?
Do tell.
They've oiled the hinges.
Igor took a hefty pull of Nanny's special brandy.
Some of those squeaks took bloody years to get right. But, oh no, now it's Igor cleaned those spiders out of the dungeon. And, Igor, order up some proper oil lamps. All these flickering torches are so 15 minutes ago. So the place looks old.
Being a vampire's about continuity, isn't it?
You get lost in the mountains and see a burning light in some castle. You've got a right to expect proper squeaking doors and some old world courtesy, ain't you?
Ah, right. And a bed in the room with a balcony outside, said Nanny.
My point exactly.
Proper billowing curtains, too.
Damn right.
Real guttering candles.
I spend ages getting them properly dribbly. Not that anyone cares.
You got to get the details right, I always say, said Nanny. Well, well, well. So, our king invited vampires, eh?
There was a thump as Igor slumped backwards and a tinny sound as the flask landed on the cobbles. Nanny picked it up and secreted it about her person.
Good head for his drink, she remarked.
Not many people ever tasted Nanny Ogg's homemade brandy. It was technically impossible. Once it encountered the warmth of the human mouth, it immediately turned into fumes. You drank it via your sinuses.
What are we going to do? Said Agnes.
Do? He invited them. They're guests, said Nanny. I bet if I asked him, Verence would tell me to mind me own business. Of course he wouldn't put it quite like that, she added, since she knew the king had no suicidal tendencies. He'd probably use the word respect 2 or 3 times at least, but it'd mean the same thing in the end.
But vampires? What's Granny going to say?
Listen, my girl, they'll be gone tomorrow. Well, today, really.
We'll just keep an eye on them and wave them goodbye when they go.
We don't even know what they look like.
Nanny looked at the recumbent Igor.
On reflection, maybe I should have asked him, she said.
She brightened up.
Still, there's one way to find them. That's something everyone knows about vampires.
In fact, there are many things everyone knows about vampires, without really taking into account that perhaps the vampires know them by now, too. The castle hall was a din. There was a mob around the buffet table. Nanny and Agnes helped out.
Canopy, anyone? Said Nanny, shoving a tray towards a likely-looking group.
I beg your pardon, said someone.
Oh, canapés.
He took a vol-au-vent and bit into it as he turned back to the group.
So I said to his lordship, "Whoa, what the hell is this?"
He turned to find himself under close scrutiny by the wrinkled old lady in a pointy hat.
Sorry, she said. This is just mashed garlic.
Don't like garlic flavour, eh?
Said Nanny sternly.
I love garlic, but it doesn't like me. This isn't just garlic-flavoured, woman, it's all garlic.
Nanny peered at her tray with theatrical short-sightedness.
No, there's a bit of... You're right. Perhaps we overdid it in that. I'll just go and, just get some... I'll just go.
She collided with Agnes at the entrance to the kitchen. 2 trays slid to the floor, spilling garlic vol-au-vents, garlic dip, garlic stuffed with garlic, and tiny cubes of garlic on a stick, stuck into a garlic.
Either there's a lot of vampires in these parts or we're doing something wrong, said Agnes flatly.
I've always said you can't have too much garlic, said Nanny.
Everyone else disagrees, Nanny.
All right, then. What else?
Ah! All vampires wear evening dress in the evenings, even this lot.
Everyone here is wearing some kind of evening dress, Nanny, except us.
Nanny Ogg looks down.
This is the dress I always wear in the evening.
Vampires aren't supposed to show up in a mirror, are they? Said Agnes.
Nanny snapped her fingers.
Good thinking, she said. There's one in the lavvy. I'll kind of hover in there. Everyone's got to go sooner or later.
But what if a man comes in?
Oh, I won't mind, said Nanny dismissively. I won't be embarrassed.
I think there may be objections, said Agnes, trying to ignore the mental picture just conjured up.
Nanny had a pleasant grin, but there had to be times when you didn't want it looking at you.
We've got to do something.
Supposing Granny were to turn up now, what would she think? Said Nanny.
We could just ask, said Agnes.
What? Hands up all vampires?
Ladies.
They turned. The young man who had introduced himself as Vlad was approaching. Agnes began to blush.
I think you were talking about vampires, he said,
taking a garlic pasty from Agnes's tray and biting into it with every sign of enjoyment.
Could I be of assistance?
Nanny looked him up and down.
Do you know much about them? She said.
Well, I am one, he said. So I suppose the answer is yes.
Charmed to meet you, Mrs. Ogg.
He bowed and reached for her hand.
"Oh, no, you don't," said Nanny, snatching it away. "I don't hold with bloodsuckers."
"I know, but I'm sure you shall in time. Would you like to come and meet my family?"
"They can bugger off! What was the king thinking of?"
"Nanny!"
"What?"
"You don't have to shout like that. It's not very polite. I don't think, Vlad de Magpier," said Vlad, bowing.
"Is going to bite my neck," shouted Nanny.
"Of course not," said Vlad. "We had some sort of bandit earlier. Mrs. Ogg is, I suspect, a meal to be savoured. Any more of these garlic things, they're rather piquant."
"You what?" said Nanny.
"You just killed someone," said Agnes.
"Of course. We are vampires," said Vlad. "Or we prefer vampires with a Y. It's more modern. Now do come and meet my father."
"You actually killed someone," said Agnes.
"Right, that's it," snarled Nanny, marching away. "I'm getting Sean, and he's going to come back with a big shot."
Vlad coughed quietly. Nanny stopped.
"There are several other things people know about vampires," he said, "and one is that they have considerable control over the minds of lesser creatures. So forget all about vampires, dear ladies. That is an order. And do come and meet my family."
Agnes blinked. She was aware that there had been something. She could feel the tail of it slipping away between her fingers.
"Seems a nice young man," said Nanny, in a mildly stunned voice.
Yes, said Agnes. Something surfaced in her mind like a message in a bottle written indistinctly in some foreign language. She tried, but she couldn't read it.
"I wish Granny was here," she said at last. "She'd know what to do."
"What about?" said Nanny.
"She ain't good at parties."
"I feel a bit odd," said Agnes.
"Ah, could be the drink," said Nanny.
"I haven't had any."
"No? Well, there's the problem right there. Come on."
They hurried into the hall. Even though it was now well after midnight, the noise level was approaching the pain threshold. When the midnight hour lies on the glass like a big cocktail onion, there's always an extra edge to the laughter. Vlad gave them an encouraging wave and beckoned them over to a group around King Verence.
"Ah, Agnes and Nanny," said the king.
"Count, may I present..."
"Githa Og and Agnes Nit, I believe," said the man the king had just been talking to.
He bowed. For some reason, a tiny part of Agnes was expecting a somber-looking man with an exciting widow's peak hairstyle and an opera cloak. She couldn't think why. This man looked like, well, like a gentleman of independent means and an inquiring mind. Perhaps the kind of man who goes for long walks in the morning and spends the afternoons improving his mind in his own private library, or doing small, interesting experiments on parsnips, and never, ever worrying about money. There was something glossy about him, and also a sort of urgent, hungry enthusiasm, the kind you get when someone has just read a really interesting book and is determined to tell someone all about it.
"Allow me to present the Countess Magpier," he said. "These are the witches I told you about, dear. I believe you've met my son, and this is my daughter, Lacrimosa."
Agnes met the gaze of a thin girl in a white dress, with very long black hair and far too much eye makeup. There is such a thing as hate at first sight.
"The Count was just telling me how he is planning to move into the castle and rule the country," said Verence, "and I was saying I think we shall be honoured."
"Well done," said Nanny. "But if you don't mind, I don't want to miss the weasel man."
"The trouble is that people always think of vampires in terms of their diet," said the Count, as Nanny hurried away. "It's really rather insulting. You eat animal flesh and vegetables, but it hardly defines you, does it?"
Verence's face was contorted in a smile, but it looked glassy and unreal.
"But you do drink human blood," he said.
"Of course. And sometimes we kill people, although hardly at all these days. In any case, where exactly is the harm in that? Prey and hunter, hunter and prey. The sheep was designed as dinner for the wolf. The wolf as a means of preventing overgrazing by the sheep. If you examine your teeth, sire, you'll see that they are designed for a particular kind of diet, and indeed your whole body is constructed to take advantage of it. And so it is with us. I'm sure the nuts and cabbages do not blame you. Hunter and prey are all just part of the great cycle of life."
Fascinating, said Verence. Little beads of sweat were rolling down his face.
Of course, in Oberwald, everyone understands this instinctively, said the Countess. But it is rather a backward place for the children. We are so looking forward to Lancre.
Very glad to hear it, said Verence.
And so kind of you to invite us, she went on. Otherwise we could not have come, of course.
Not exactly, said the Count, beaming at his wife. But I have to admit that the prohibition against entering places uninvited has proved curiously durable. It must be something to do with the ancient territorial instincts. But, he added brightly, I have been working on an instructional technique which I'm sure will, within a few years... Oh, don't let's go through all that dull stuff again, said Lacrimosa.
Yes, I suppose it can sound a little tedious, said the Count, smiling benevolently at his daughter. Has anyone any more of that wonderful garlic dip? ¶¶